Psychological Matters.
So she is a psychotherapist and a social worker, and we're going to be talking about, that very, very important decision that many of us make, and that is to give up alcohol, particularly alcohol, but it can be any indulgent substance that helps you through the day, I suppose. And how do you deal with that? Yeah, I'm looking forward to those calls. 011-883-0702. I'd also love to hear from you if you've had some awkward moments with regards to that. Yeah, where you caught yourself having the third beer and then realizing, oh, I had said not drinking. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. She's here with me in studio. Kifilwe, thank you so much for joining us. It is really a pleasure having you in studio, especially at this time of the night. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you so much, I would agree.
So is this a thing? Are a lot of people deciding to stop drinking at one point or the other? And what are the main reasons why people would make this decision?
Most of the time, it's either medical, physical, and of course, you have found new faith.
Yep.
And so there are a number of reasons why one chooses.
Yeah. I suppose when you're making that decision to stop drinking, it makes sense. And it is the right thing to do. It's obviously the desirable thing to do, perhaps for your spirit, for your body, for whatever reason you make that choice. But I suppose it's also a very difficult discipline to hold on to, right?
It is, but I'm careful as well as to certifying that statement and saying, acknowledge that it is.
Yeah.
Because the more we say that, the more now the brain codes it to say it's difficult.
It's difficult, okay.
So let's say it's doable.
It's doable.
Yes.
But it's challenging.
It's challenging, for sure. But there should be a bigger why then.
Yes.
Exactly.
Tell me about why it would be challenging.
It is challenging because let's look at, we're speaking alcohol or any substance for that matter.
Sure.
Now there's this cognitive element that comes with it. There's also the biochemistry of it, the physical. Your body will, the withdrawal symptoms that comes, the physiological dependency on this thing that you've been consuming. Now you have to excuse yourself from it, either temporarily or forever, you know. So, of course, your body will respond.
Especially
depending on the quantity. How were you binge drinking?
Yeah.
Were you a heavy drinker? Where were you? Occasionally, well, it's easier. So,
and it's a way by which we normalize it, because it gets us through. You know, if I'm used to having a little scotch after work, for example, because it gets me nice and mellow, for whatever the case may be, the absence of that ritual, the absence of, I suppose, the physiological, effect of that is going to be very difficult for me, depending on how long I've been doing this,
100%. So you're basically highlighting the habit that one has built.
Yeah.
And breaking a habit, sometimes a habit can even overtake you before you can even be cognitive conscious about the fact that I'm getting home and I want to consume. Already it's a behavioral thing, so your mind is ahead of you. It's already used to it before you can consciously say, now, do I want, do I not want? So breaking a habit, of course, it's a challenging thing.
There's a meme on social media of a close-up picture of a gorilla. Like close-up picture of the face. And this gorilla, it's chewing, it's eating something. And then the caption arises, it says, "Help, I've just forgotten that I'm supposed to be
on
a
diet." I think I saw that. Yes.
And it has me cracking up.
Yes.
There's also the I think it's Finding Nemo. Is it Finding Nemo? You know, that cartoon. I can't remember, but there's a shark in this particular cartoon that has given up on meat. Think about it. A shark that no longer eats meat, right? And he's all very, very holy about it, and he's all sanctimonious about it. He doesn't want to eat meat anymore and whatever the case may be. And then one of his good friends scratches himself against some sort of a wire or something like that, and there's a small bleed.
Eesh.
And the shark smells the blood. and he goes crazy, goes absolutely crazy. So all of that. So I imagine that that kind of thing is true also for those of us who have been enjoying a glass of whiskey, a glass of wine, a beer or so for the longest of time when we make the decision to stop and then something is triggered. You talked about something very, very significant, that the why must be big enough. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So normally, part of my job, I do behavior modification. So this comes, especially fits with this topic, because now we're speaking about somebody quitting alcohol, and we're speaking now about socializing. And so do we now have to decide where do we marry and we divorce the two. So with behavior modification, we come and draft a program to say, why? You give me the why. Why do you want to leave alcohol? And then I understand broadly as to the reasons behind. And that will guide us into designing a specific program for that person. So that now I wouldn't say exclusify it to say it's a rehab, but I'm specifically saying behavior modification because it includes a number of things.
Yeah.
How you're going to withdraw mentally, physically, and otherwise. So it takes your everything, your life literally. I look at the holistic change in your life, not just quitting, but that thing. But you're thinking around it. What meaning have you attached to socializing that now makes it difficult for you to socialize without alcohol? So, and to what degree can you still, if you want to socialize, then what is socializing? What are you going to do? Can you socialize without alcohol? So it's a number of things. Your why will the behavior modification program is informed by that, actually, to say
what is behavior modification? What does that mean?
Simple. You have a behavior that you want to modify. What is that? There's legal implication, financial implications, social, marital issues that you might have maybe developed as a result of consuming that particular substance or alcohol. Now, for you to modify that, you need behavior modification, and it's a number of things which has to do with you altering your behavior. But you cannot exclusively alter your behavior without us looking at the cognitions behind. So there's a number of things that's what I'm interested in. That's my job, looking at the rationale, the cognitions behind, before, after, and even what you were taught about, the borrowed narratives about alcohol.
Yes.
Exactly. So it's a number of things.
I mean, that is like really deep. It's not just about stopping
100%.
To drink the beer. Right?
100%.
It's about, I mean, you said something very interesting there where you said, what meanings do you attach to certain rituals that you've become accustomed to? Please give us a call. I see the calls are starting to come in. 011-883-0702. Give us a call as I speak to my guest. She's a psychotherapist and social worker. Her name is Kefilwe Mojapelo, and we are talking about behavior modification. Yeah? I mean, that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about behavior modification, but of a specific type, where you make the decision that you want to stop using a particular substance. At this moment, we're talking about stopping drinking. Yeah? What was the reason for you stopping drinking? And how did you fare? Did you finish the race? Or do you sometimes find yourself falling off the wagon? What are the reasons why you keep falling off the wagon? That thing that you've just said now about what meanings do you attach to your socialization? There are certain borrowed narratives, as you've just said now, about how you understand your drinking and so forth. What have you found out?
So mostly the borrowed narratives, one would say alcohol makes you relax, it makes you do this, it makes you do that. I love to interrogate that and really explore as to why a person came to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Because you find out that it's a borrowed narrative. This person doesn't even understand what they mean. They hear it from that point, from the generalized point or perspective. But when we interrogate and critique it deeply, then you realize, oh, good, you know, actually it's not what you are saying.
Let me tell you something. Now that you say, somebody had to say it. Somebody had to say it. I have a friend of mine there where I live, Moenokifilu. He considers himself a bit of an aficionado as far as whiskey is concerned. You know, he likes to talk about, you know the Irish are the ones that have really understood this thing.
Yes.
And then he says, you know, everybody talks about the Scottish. He says, you know, the Scots, and everybody says Scotch whiskey. No, Masango. You must look at the Irish. He says, you know, the Japanese, nobody talks about the Japanese, but you know, the Japanese have got a very, very powerful technique in making whiskey. And he talks about this stuff. And then when you listen to these guys talk about whiskey and all of these things, it sounds like it's the most beautiful tasting stuff. Ah, so one day, I tried to drink this stuff.
Yes.
I, you know.
What that?
I, it's not nice.
Mm.
It tastes like petrol. So I discovered that maybe some of us have got borrowed narratives about what something is supposed to taste like. And maybe some of us are not educated enough. I understand. But then I enjoyed, he enjoys a thing called Jameson. Yeah, he likes Jameson, that one. And so he helps me to have a few. Hey, but I liked the effect, man.
Mm.
I felt relaxed. I felt, but the flow was nice and so forth. And then I realized how it is very possible to get caught by this thing. I realized how it gets caught by this thing and how I want to be in his company so that I can enjoy that thing all the time.
Mm.
But sometimes we don't have money. And now we steal money from other accounts to buy that Jameson, me and him, and so that we can enjoy that thing. And then we look very, very stupid when we are asked about where the money is and so forth. So I understand how sometimes people can realize these things and then decide, I'm pulling out of this thing because it's causing me these kinds of things. What kinds of reasons do people come up with practically to you to say, listen, I want this modification. I want this behavior modification. I want to stop. I want to stop for a while. What do they say to you as a professional?
Mostly what I'm getting is part of my job, I also do employee wellness.
Okay.
So that's where now even managers send people to wellness programs to see us so that we can, because now it's impacting their job. It's impacting your day-to-day functioning at work, you know, at home.
Absenteeism on Monday.
Absenteeism on Monday and Fridays, late coming.
Yeah.
Money and now having to explain to the better half as to where the money went.
Hey.
Now that having an implication on your relationship again.
Yeah.
Now that how going out a lot, because now you are called into events and other things, your friends are pulling you over, how that compromises your relationship with your kids and other things in the house. So there's a number of reasons, including those. Yeah.
And is that mostly alcohol related?
Mostly, yes, but not exclusively related to alcohol. Because,
what other substances come into play sometimes?
Of course, some of the things, Kiddy, Habli Leona, and some of the things that people put in those things.
What is that?
Hey, Habli, the things that... Yes, and what now
Sorry,
they put,
man.
Because some of the people, they get caught up in the social... Yes, in the social aspect of it, but you forgot originally asthma. So there are a number of things as well. People, we like to fit into a certain social, either status or something that is put
that
out
there.
Yeah,
the peer pressure thing.
Exactly.
That okay.
Forgetting your own individualization and your own individual factors that might not agree to that behavior.
Yes.
So unfortunately, those are the reasons people come as well.
0118830702, and maybe sometimes there is that moment of celebration. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I've got a couple of calls that I want to take. 0118830702. Have you given up on alcohol, perhaps temporarily or permanently? Yeah. And what has the reason for that been? How are you doing? How are you faring with that decision? How are you keeping it on the straight and narrow? Do you sometimes fall off the wagon? And if you do, why? What attachment have you, what meaning have you attached to your drinking, perhaps, that keeps you falling off of the wagon? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 011-883-0702. My guest's name is Gifilwe Mojapelo. She is a psychotherapist and social worker. I'm really looking forward to all of those calls. Sean is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Sean.
Good evening, Aubrey.
Are you well this evening?
I'm very well.
Excellent.
Listen to your show a lot.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I'm 63 years of age today.
Yep. Hey, happy birthday, Sean!
No, look, it's not my birthday, but at the moment I'm 63.
Oh, at
but
the
thanks
moment.
Anyway. But as a young man, I used to drink a heck of a lot. Yeah. And I think, you know, I've spent a lot of time analyzing it and that over the years. And I've spoken to a lot of friends trying to help them. And each time I've spoken to them, I've sort of analyzed my own situation more and more. So I came to realize that I drank hard and fast from the start because by nature I'm aggressive. So why would I drink differently to I do everything else?
Yeah.
Whether I drive a car or work or play or sport, it's always hard and flat out. So slow things like beer and wine didn't work for me. It was always the brandy and Coke, and then eventually it was only brandy.
Yeah.
And, of course, you get into a spiral where you do more and more stupid things, and then you have to drink more and more to feel normal the next time you drink. And it was basically naughtiness for many of the years until when I was about 27 years of age, I tried to clean up my act.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was really ill, and he was always proud of me, and I didn't feel that it was justified. So I thought, let me be a good young father and a good son and try and stop the drinking. But then, unfortunately, he died with cancer, and then I drank for a reason. From there on, the wheels fell off completely.
Sure.
And when I drank, there were no breaks. Mm-hmm. And I started to get very aggressive and violent when I was drinking.
Mm.
And I started to become quite abusive as a husband to my very young wife. Mm. And after one heavy bout over Easter weekend, I woke up in the morning and I couldn't remember anything other than I vaguely had an image of my two little children with horror on their face, and I couldn't remember why. And then the phone calls start from friends. Don't worry, we covered up for you. You're not going to get into trouble. But too scared to ask what it was I actually did. But to piece it all together, I realized that I went berserk in a pub one night, started smacking friends around, and then went after my wife, and the kids were standing watching.
Oh.
And I must have recalled the look on their face. And I just, from that point, decided that I will never allow my children to see me like that again. Mm. And I made a decision to stop drinking. And initially it was, when I made the decision, within a day or two, I spoke to my wife about it, and I told her, look, I'm never going to touch this stuff again. And I could see that she didn't quite believe me.
You, yeah.
Yeah, and she'd already made up her mind that, you know, our marriage was over, it was time to move on. And that came as a big shock to me because I thought, now I'm going to do a great thing, and it's too late.
Mm.
But then, over the next day or so, I processed this more in my mind, and I said, actually, it's not about my children and my wife. It's about me and the fact that I'm still alive, that I haven't killed somebody in my drunken stupor the way I drive. And I've woken up in police cells in that drunk and not remembering anything. The fact that I'm still walking was amazing, and maybe I must just park my family's issues for the moment and consider about saving myself. And so I think at that point, the decision went from doing this for my family to doing it for me. And I think that is why I've been successful ever since, is that the decision was I was doing it and I didn't want to let myself down, didn't want to let somebody else down. Because I think the moment you do it for somebody else or for your job or for your friend or for your mother.
Your children, yeah.
And you have a run-in with them, then you justify in the back of your mind that I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
Might as well drink again. But the interesting thing, and I've never drank again since, not once.
Mm.
It was a little bit difficult in the beginning, but then I learned that all I had to do was avoid the first drink. All the others weren't a problem.
Of course.
I could always avoid the second and the third if I just avoided the first.
Listen, Sean, I'm loving your candor. I'm loving your vulnerability. What about your kids and your wife? Are you still with them?
Yeah, so my wife and I have now been together 40-odd years. Very happy now. But and my kids, they never sort of suffered from that period because they were still very young.
Yes.
We've spoken about it a lot as we grew up as a family together, and they've also learned a lot from it, and they're very good adults today.
Yeah.
But the thing was, you know, I said I came home and my wife was sort of on the verge of divorce. And then I told her my story, and she said, well, I think she said to herself, I'll wait and see. Because some years later, she went through a nervous breakdown, and I couldn't understand why our relationship was up and down and up and down. And when I thought it was up, I actually found out it was down. Mm. And then she went through a nervous breakdown, and she pushed everybody out of her life except for me.
Sean,
and on the way,
I've got to stop you, my brother. I'm so sorry because I've got to take other calls. But thank you for your candor. Thank you for your sensitivity. Thank you for your vulnerability. And I think a lot of us have learned a lot from your call. Much appreciated, Sean in Pretoria. Wow,
Indeed, Aubrey. So I'm always a party pooper because now, unfortunately, I deal with the aftermath of all these things.
Yes,
where things come to you, and
you would be dealing with a wife and the children.
Thank you.
In this particular scenario, right? Yeah,
exactly. And moreover, the person who's now regretting, and yet they cannot stop, and they keep on until, because they want to forget these problems and try to, you know, when you try to avoid and evade a situation, yet you go to the very same thing that caused the very same problem.
Yeah.
And then now imagine the negative cycle that goes through your head. You want to stop and you want to silence the things in your head. You keep on bringing another drink until everything is just goes out of the window. And that's where most of the time I find people to say, now what?
I want to read you some of the messages. By the way, give us your calls on 011-883-0702. If you're in Cape Town, the number is 021-446-0567. When you decide to stop drinking, whether permanently or temporarily, what are the reasons? And how do you handle that decision? How do the people around you, your family members, handle that? I suppose that's a big issue.
Indeed.
Yeah?
Indeed.
Tell me about that.
Exactly, because now they would be making a mockery of you. And you start now feeling, remember, peer pressure, unfortunately, doesn't have, it's not just on the adolescent or something.
Yeah.
It's on all levels. Your friends would say, no, come on, man. So on all levels, you'd feel that pressure. They're making a mockery out of you. Some would even tell you to say, you know what, you cannot. We are used to doing this. So there's so much pressure. So the number one is the support must come from the immediate people around you.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine how difficult it must be. I can imagine how difficult it must be for even friends who have come to know you as the life of the party.
Yeah.
You know, as the person who makes everybody happy when you've had a couple. And suddenly you're not as jovial. Perhaps you are a little bit more inhibited. I can imagine how difficult it is for them. And perhaps the way that they try to handle that awkwardness is by humorizing it, by mocking.
Yes, yes.
And that is not always easy to handle, right?
It may not.
Yeah.
It may, because now you understand, you went into the deeper elements of the self, of yourself.
Yes.
And from that, it can be bearable and easy, because now you can even add on to the mockery and tell them, because now you are a bigger person than you've been. So it can be easy, but it can also be difficult when you haven't reached that level. The muscle hasn't been lifted enough and it is built. So on that initial phase.
Of self-control, of understanding self, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. Bigger than the others.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I want to read you some of the messages coming through. Please give us a call on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Was it a temporary reprieve, or is it a permanent thing? Like Sean has stopped for 40 years. 40 years, 40 years without a drink. Give me a call. 011-883-0702. All right. So some of the messages coming through on our WhatsApp messages are from Tumi. Says, "Good evening, Grootman. Just heard you, and now on the topic that's upcoming, being a recovering alcoholic and being a clean for 5 years. Congratulations, Tumi. Now, it's never easy, Abu Obs. Had to change my friends, had to stop attending functions for long hours. It's not easy. And you find that so many people drink and you are around them. Sometimes one gets to feel like life's boring, but yet I know I have this disease called alcoholism, Itumeleng, out in Western Area. Thanks very much for that, Itu." Yeah, it's a very hard moment of self-reckoning.
100%. Right? 100%. So that's why I'm bringing the behavior modification aspect of it, more than just simply quitting or putting a stop for that temporary moment. So it's more on a, let's overhaul your whole life. Let's look at everything.
Friends.
Exactly.
Functions.
Exactly.
Your status in your community, in 100%. Your family, and all of those kinds of
exactly.
things.
Exactly. And me challenging you now to live the life that you want and pushing yourself beyond things that are mediocre and taking things on a set. So it's a bigger, I'm not a life coach, but we look at many other things. And sometimes from the psychological element, you might even include a life coach to say, because it's a bigger, there's the why has to be big. So hence I'm saying, unfortunately, from where I am, or fortunately, I look at it from a holistic point of view, from a social, emotional, spiritual, psychological, family and other things, so that it can be a well-rounded and holistic program that covers everything.
You know, there's an uncle of mine, I won't mention names, but those that are in my family will know who I'm talking about. He is literally the life of the party. Whether it is maghadi, whether it is funeral, whether it is unveiling, whatever the occasion is, of he's the life of the party. He's funny, he's jocular, he makes people come together and all of those kinds of things. But he drinks so much.
Eish.
And as much as everybody else around him loves him, or everybody loves him, but he's a terror in his home, in his own household.
Eish.
He's a terror. His wife, his children are always looking at us and saying, you guys enjoy him. But as soon as he leaves that environment, he becomes and he terrorizes us at home. And I remember having a conversation with him and saying, Maluma, but do you realize that you are Mr. Jekyll, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Yeah? And it was interesting that he said to me, I can't stop. He said, I can't stop myself. I can't stop. What do you do with somebody like that?
Yeah. So why can't one stop? We look at all these elements. What makes it difficult to stop? What made you start even? What was happening in your life at that particular time that made you drink to that degree? And then from there, it can give me an idea. And from there, I can then draft an intervention plan. And then you also have it, can input it to say then, how do we then do this thing? And hence I'm saying, I'm fortunate because I'm facing the real person,
yes.
Not the social person, not the what, but
yeah.
I deal with hardcore real issues. And from that point of view, now you can see the person revealing themselves to their true self. Even if they were not, now with the many questions and whatever that I'm posing to them, then a person starts to reflect and go deeper from attachment style, from everything. Were you drinking because you wanted to get over something? Some of the people, unfortunately, they start drinking because sometimes you are raped, you are trying to forget. There are a number of things, unfortunately, that deal with all of that. Sometimes you killed a person, now you try to forget. So there's a number of things. So I look at all of that and really we see, why can't you stop? And really find a plan around it, and as extreme as we can be. Everything, I really put on everything, putting your life purpose, putting everything around you to say, how do you get you to really stop?
That movie I was making a reference to is called Shark's Tale. Thanks very much, MD. It's called Shark's Tale. You've got to watch that. It's the funniest thing in the world. I think with Maluma, he thinks he can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
No, no. He thinks he doesn't want to stop because he thinks he can't stop. I don't have the depth of understanding that you might have about these things, but I listen to the way that he talks. And it's always a matter of, I can't stop. So I don't even entertain the idea of stopping. Did you see what I mean? Anyway, let me take some more calls. Mike is an Orman in the Orman in the Middle East. Mike, good evening to you.
Good evening, Orman. How are you?
I'm well, man. Orman, where is Orman?
Well, it's just 400 k's from Dubai.
400 k's from Dubai, man. It is beautiful to know that somebody's listening to us from the Middle East, man.
Every day I'm listening to 702, man.
Wow, great stuff. What is on your mind, Mike?
Yes, good. So I just have a comment regarding Actually, I didn't stop drinking per se, but due to the trauma that I had when I was very, very young, so I decided not to take any kind of alcohol.
Yeah.
So what happened is I had a very abusive father, so I would see how he behaved after taking alcohol. Each and every night, he would treat my mom as a punching bag. So sure. I had that trauma, imagine it for. So I grew up and I told myself, I will never, ever, ever, ever take any kind of alcohol. So it gave me, it's another level of perception when it comes to taking any alcohol.
You've never even tried alcohol?
I've never, I don't even know any kind of, any taste of any alcohol. It's not about religion or whatever, but yeah. Due to the trauma that I had when I was only 4 or 5 years. Now I'm 43.
Sure. Mike, thanks very much for your call, my brother, and thank you very much for making the call so far away from home. Hey, Ubo Anengheim.
Pardon?
When are you coming back home?
Sorry, I can't hear you.
When are you coming back home?
Oh, okay. I'll be traveling this month, and so on the 1st of May, I'll be at home.
Call us when you're home and tell us, hey, it's Mike from Orman, there in Middle East. There.
Definitely, absolutely.
Wonderful, Mike in Orman. Franz Ngaki says, Aubrey, I once heard that breaking a habit is almost impossible, says Franz. He said, remove H from habit, you are left with a bit of habit. Remove both H and A, you are left with bit of habit. Okay, remove H and A and B, you are left with
it.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean. But what do you make of Mike's call all the way from the Middle East?
Oh, you know, exactly the trauma behind it.
Yeah.
So it's sad how we are traumatized by our parents and you don't even start to even. So it's also maybe a good thing, but unfortunately the trauma, of course, we cannot say trauma is good.
Sure.
But perhaps for him, a personal decision, it works for him if good enough.
Let's take a call from Jerry in Pretoria. Jerry, good evening to you.
Good evening, bro. Oops, how are you?
I'm well, my brother. How are you?
All right, man.
Excellent.
I just want to give a short version of how I stopped drinking.
Yeah. Mm.
In fact, it was a personal choice. I was not motivated by any other thing except that I started to think about why, the reasons why I have been drinking. I couldn't find a single reason except that drinking, you want to take the shyness out of you. Because the moment you start drinking, yes, when you are not shy anymore, the things that you would refrain from doing when you were sober, now you're strong enough to do them.
Mm.
Okay, and the other thing was, I thought about, okay, am I really drowning my challenges in alcohol?
Mm.
But in the morning, I'll wake up with a headache, with papalas, I was sick, so it just did not make sense. Anyway, and I came to Pretoria from Marble Hall. I've been working in Marble Hall. I came to Pretoria, and I loved drinking and driving. So every time, I think more than 7 times, the speed cops stopped me, but they couldn't detect that I had been drinking. And after letting me go the last time, I decided, you know what, I'm tired of stretching God's patience. He has just saved me from going to the cells.
Mm.
So I think I just need a day in which I'll quit drinking. You won't believe me. I quit on the 31st of December, 2013, at the height of New Year Eve.
Yeah.
I quit drinking. I stopped here and there because I had started drinking whiskey because this other stuff did not give me the kick that I needed.
Yeah.
And here and there, I decided, okay, you know what? This is possible. You know, I decided I'm not going to need any help or nothing. I just want to see if I'll really die of having quit drinking. I wanted to be, in fact, my aim was to be in the books, in the world, what do they call it?
Guinness Book of
Records for having died because I quit drinking. That motivated me.
No, I hear you, my brother. And have you stayed the course? Have you stuck with your decision?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And you know what? The people that I used to drink with my brothers and so on, they said, no, I'm not gonna last long because I've been drinking for quite some time. Yes. And I told them, I said, you know what? I'm going to stay with you when you are drinking. Whether it be the whole night, I'll be with you, but I'll drink my water. I'll drink my cool drink. And I stuck to that. Up to today, they respect me because you see, Bra Ops, I realized that you can live within the walls you build yourself. If you think you are not good enough, if you think you can't, obviously you can't, and you stop all the possibilities that God might want to give you so that you survive and thrive in whatever that you want to do. So the moment you say you can't, you are defeated. Mm. You can't speak victory, and that. But on the other hand, you speak defeat. The two can't go together.
Jerry, in Pretoria, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you,
much appreciated. Ezekiel Makubo says, hey, I love this show, man. This person says, thank you so much for this topic. How do I support a friend or family member who is an alcoholic to stick to their behavior modification decisions? Every time we believe, then even after counseling, we find out that they have been lying and drinking in secret until they are caught. As a family and friends, we want to support without judgment or losing patience, says this person. Mr. Tsiu says, Braobs, the loneliness that comes with stopping to drink alcohol, friends you used to hang out with start saying you're boring and no longer want to hang out with you. I stopped drinking in June 2021 and I'm happy. I have achieved so much. The only thing is just loneliness, says Mr. T. As we come to a close, it appears that this is an issue about existential decisions that one needs to make. It sounds to me like it's about looking at the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror and making that change.
Exactly.
But it's not that easy.
Exactly. And
it sounds to me that, but there's something after that. Talk to me about
that. So, I love what Jerry said as well. And now, as we said, the why. Over and above that, though, especially, I'm still going to go back to behavior modification. And I love what you say as well, because one of the approaches that I use is existential psychotherapy to look at the bigger why to life. Why are you here? What is your impact? What are you doing here? How are you deliberately, consciously, and intentionally doing that? So some of the times we are very passive. So part of the behavior modification, over and above what somebody brings to me, I want to challenge them to say, be conscious, be deliberate, be intentional about what you do. As you wake up in the morning, how do you structure your day, your mind, and your everything, and bring your whole self? So I practically and realistically bring the practical and realistic thing to say, this is a to-do. Because some of the things, it's too psychological, man. You cannot bring it to reality and really and touch it with your hand. Exactly. And I'm a very practical person to say, how do I literally help you structure your day in such a way that you are able to structure your mind, your thoughts, and your day in such a way that it goes towards what you want, instead of leaving your mind to decide whatever for you and the gush of mind, everything to come. If it's you are drinking for a particular thing, they just come. So you're literally saying, change your mind and be deliberate about it. Be deliberate about what you think, the content, the people that you socialize with, the company that you keep. How are they inputting on your bigger why to life, your purpose in life? How are they fitting into that? Maybe cutting friends, loneliness, maybe the friends that you have, you may not need for your life at that point.
And I've discovered that this thing that we call loneliness,
mm-hmm.
sometimes, you know, there's loneliness and then there's solitude.
100%.
And sometimes because we've never come across the thing called solitude, we think it is loneliness.
Exactly.
And I would say, Mr. Tsiu, give it a chance. There are things that you may discover about yourself that you didn't even know existed, that'll deepen relationships around you, that'll deepen your understanding of life and your big why, as Gifilo says. Are we saying, though, that people should all become teetotalers? Is that what we say?
Well, there's as much as we are relational beings, there's a, I love a person to tune into themselves more. Who is you? What are you about?
I like that. Who is you, man?
Exactly. So let's tune into ourselves more so that when that alone moment comes, then you can tune into yourself and know when to be alone and be content in your aloneness. And when now you need people as well and be relational. So most of us are more relational and forgetting to be into ourselves. So I, that's where I also bring it, the element, the relational element of it and you being still being connected to the world, because we are wired for a connection. Sure, we are human sure. beings, and still being alone and being content in your aloneness. That we need that a lot.
Yeah.
I become frustrated if I don't spend the time
absolutely.
With myself.
Absolutely. I think a lot of us are so alienated from ourselves that we are afraid to confront some of the questions that that arise out of self.
That's so profound.
And sometimes we want the noise.
Mm.
You know, there's a song, I think it's Will Smith, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and he starts off, I think it's Summertime. Hey, is it Summertime? He says, bring the noise.
Yes.
And it's fine, bring the noise, but there's got to be a moment of silence as well. And sometimes that reprieve from alcohol and all of those indulgences can give us that time.
100%.
How do people get a hold of you, Akifire?
My numbers at 064-528-0007 or email info@kmpsychosocialradio.co.za. And then you can look Facebook, Kifile Leradile Mojapilo, and TikTok and Facebook. And yeah.
Great stuff. Hope to see you again soon.
Yes,
please. These are very, very important issues.
Indeed.
Thank you very much for coming through.